and I am a second year PhD student at Royal Holloway. And today my presentation is titled A Model of Care for Male Prisoners Who Self-Harm, An Understanding of Information Flow Within a Carceral Space and Its Consequences for Care. And this paper is co-authored by Professor Lizzie Coles-Kemp and Dr. Emily Glawney. So today we're going to look at the extent of the problem of self-harm in prison, the prison service response to this and its criticisms, especially regarding information flow, what information sharing is within prison, and an imagined model of care. But before I do look at this, I want to tell you about an experience that I had working as a practitioner in prison. And this involves an example of a prisoner who used to self-harm a lot that I worked with. And for the purpose today, I'm going to call him Prisoner SN. I actually initially wanted to use his real initials, which was BA, but my supervisor told me that might have been the A team, so it was not wise to use that. So today we're calling him Prisoner SN, after my initials, so I don't forget. So Prisoner SN, he had complex needs. He had a primary diagnosis of borderline personality disorder and depression. His self-harm is what we'd call prolific. And I had witnessed him engage in lots of different kinds of self-harm, but in particular, cutting, burning, and headbanging. And his self-harm behaviour had many functions, some of which included when he was distressed, when he could not communicate his needs, when he felt he needed more support than he was getting, or when he felt that others were not listening to him. Now, I personally found, from what I was watching when I was working with him and what I was seeing within my workplace, that different staff reacted to this behaviour in different ways. So some staff were incredibly supportive and very compassionate towards him and the needs he needed for his self-harm. Others would try and move him to healthcare because they believed there they could better support his challenging behaviours. And others would distance themselves from him, thinking that either he was being manipulative or that they weren't able to help him. And this really led to a problem with the information that was being shared about him. So we could see examples from this from his prison notes, so what was recorded about him on the system, his ACT documents, what was written in his ACT documents, something I'll talk about a little bit more later, and just with the verbal information that was handed over between staff. And I think it's likely then, really, if we think about this, that the information that is presented for his assessment of risk and his assessments and needs, that are continually ongoing assessments in the prison, is likely to be either inconsistent or inaccurate or not enough information was being provided. And so I feel that this example really highlights the need to better understand self-harm information, the impact that it can have, and on really knowing this, what we can do to better provide support for prisoners that are self-harming in prison. So what is the extent of the problem of self-harm in prison? Well, we know that self-harm in male prisoners is roughly 4 to 12 times more common than it is in the general population. We know that self-harm in males is on the increase in prison, and this is both in the amount of people that are engaging in self-harm and the number of incidences that they're also engaging in. And women prisoners are often talked about in terms of demonstrating more prolific self-harm, but the male counterparts require 4 times more hospital admissions than the females. So that shows kind of the problem there is there. So what's been the prison service response to this? Well, in 2004, and this did take a few years for it to be fully initiated into the system, but in 2004, in replacement of the previous system, a new NOMS framework was introduced. And this was the Assessment, Care and Custody and Teamwork, the ACT. And this is a document that both assesses and monitors risk, as well as providing a recovery care plan for the prisoner. And alongside this was the introduction of the PSI 64/2011, which is a policy. Now, we know that both this policy and this practice, they introduced better ways of information sharing within the carceral space due to some of the criticisms of the previous system. And this information sharing focused on the sharing of information internally, so between different disciplines, externally, so with different agencies, between the prisoner and the staff, and also with the prisoner's families. But the majority of these strategies that were introduced really focused around the information flow. So this is the movement of information from A to B. Lots of other strategies were introduced. many of which you can see, and this is the PSI, so it's more policy-based, this one. Now, the effectiveness of the Act and the policy has been assessed critically within some of the large prison reports. So this would include reports done by the HM Chief Inspectorate, and their annual reviews, and the Prison and Probation Ombudsman reports, and as well as Howard Review and the Howard League Review and the Harris reports and things like this. And although they demonstrate huge improvements on the previous system, they're really helpful still to highlight where there is still breakdown and information flow within the castle space. So, thinking about some of these outcomes, I'm just going to, well, for today, I've just put them into categories that we can look at, and I'm going to give you some examples from each of these. So, where is the breakdown in information flow? Well, firstly, if we think about this putting policy into practice, this has been found to be problematic in some cases. And an example of this is given by the Ministry of Justice Learning Bulletin. And they state that on the introduction of the PSI, this has caused confusion with some staff with the way that it's operationalised. And the result of this has been that the app documents that are opened on concern of people engaging in self-harm or suicidal behaviours, that they were being opened purely on the basis of previous risk information that they were getting. So it wasn't relevant to the current day of the presented risk. And so this was problematic because there was too many acts that were being opened, not for the purpose in which they were needed. And I think this kind of demonstrates that there's a lack of understanding around the processes of information and what we should do with the information that we get. Sharing medical information, this has been something that has talked about a lot within the large reports. And if we think to the situation of prisoner SN, in my opinion, the opinions of the custodial staff in comparison to the healthcare staff were very different in the ways in which they understood his mental health diagnosis, the impact of this, and also the functions of his self-harm behaviour. And this, of course, led to differences in information sharing. And the PPO review, they similarly stated in one of their investigations that they were finding that medical documents were still not being shared when they were meant to have been shared. And this is, could be reinforced by some of the outcomes of the Harris review, and this is a review that's into self-inflicted deaths of youth offenders. And they stated in some of their outcomes that at times prison officers were saying that they wanted more access to information that was collated by healthcare. And on trying to get their hands on this information, they were coming up against several barriers to actually getting their hands on it. So it was clear that there is this problem with the kinds of information that are being shared. And in this case, it's healthcare. And it fits in with lots of different areas within the prison as well, with reception and prisoners coming into prison and not having access to information around their healthcare because they don't come into prison with any information. So it causes a big problem with actually this flow of information about healthcare. So multidisciplinary working, I think it's likely if we look at the case of SN that the teams that were responsible for his care on the main wings and the multidisciplinary team involved there would likely document different information than that of the healthcare teams and the multidisciplinary teams there, and in particular the information that was shared about him when he moves out to medium secure units, mental health establishments that are outside of the prison but are still for offenders. And this is something that has also been looked at within the Harris Review. And they state that on looking into their investigation, the information was still falling through the gaps between different disciplines. And so this multidisciplinary working is something that's really problematic within prison, and this sharing of information between them is particularly something that's been noted. So the operationalisation of the Act, I suppose before saying this, we should look at the PPO Learning Bulletin for Self-Inflicted Deaths in Females, and part of them talking about the operationalisation of the Act was them talking about multidisciplinary working. And with this, they really found that there was a breakdown between the communication between healthcare staff and custodial staff, but this impacted on the operationalisation of the Act, whereby they found that at times healthcare were not present at Act reviews, And this impacted on the information that was being documented within the Act because there was a lack of healthcare information within this. And I feel that this is really indicative of the lack of flow of information within the castle space. So as I've stated, we know that there's a problem with information flow. But I think if we really look at the examples of prisoner SN, it is clear that information sharing is more than just how policy dictates flow, and therefore a theoretical and conceptual understanding of information is useful for understanding how it's shared. And for this, I've looked to the work of Goffman just to provide a framework into thinking what this could mean, and his understanding of total institutions, such as prison. So Goffman really states the power and control of a total institution and the influence that this can have on those inside, and therefore the influence of the institutional perceptions. And some researchers state that within prison, self-harm is managed as a proxy to suicide. And therefore, I would argue that if this is the case, this not only influences the conceptualization of self-harm, but also influences the conceptualization of self-harm information. Goffman emphasises the power imbalance between prison officers and prisoners, whereby the prison officers have the power to control information to and from prisoners. And with interviews with prison officers, the researcher Tate found that there was different typologies of prison officers regarding those that were caring for prisoners who were self-harming. And these typologies were really suggestive of their level of interaction with the prisoner, their response to the self-harm and their attitude towards the self-harm. Goffman talks about the mortification of the self and the impact that an institution can have on the self. And with this, he talks about the process of prisoners going through a series of degradation and humiliation and bashment, which impacts on self-identity. And Mazzano, who did interviews with prisoners who self-harmed, she found, and her colleagues, that there was recurrent themes of what they were saying about the prison officers. And they were stating that prison officers did not care and did not understand about their self-harm behaviour, and that this, in the majority of cases, negatively impacted on themselves. And this demonstrates the importance of understanding the institution and the individual impact on the conceptualization of information about self-harm. So what does this mean for care and safety of prisoners who self-harm, like prisoner SN? Well, I would argue that for better safety and care, we need both the flow of information through the authorization of good policies and an institution, including those within it, that share accurate information and respond to information in a useful way. So thinking about this and what this could look like in a model, I've used the work of Toronto and her model of care just to provide me with a framework for the imagined model that I'm showing you today. And so to look at these in slightly more detail, these are her stages of care that she's developed. And so what are they saying? So caring about, so this is the recognition of a need for care and deciding that there are needs which need to be met. And these are culturally and societal and individual perceptions which shape individuals that we see as needing to be cared about. Taking care of, so this requires agency, responsibility for a care need, deciding which needs need to be met, and conflicts can be found between different individuals' perceptions of need or how they should be received. She talks about the caregiving, and this is the direct meeting of needs. And bureaucracies that are often determine how needs are to be met are often not involved in the actual care given, which this can have a detrimental impact on the quality of care that's given. And finally is the actual care receiving, and this is an important stage to always consider. And the response by the object of need is a measure of the effectiveness of the care given. In perceptions, if perceptions and needs are wrong, or the actions taken in response to needs is wrong, then the care given is not achieved. So how can this look if we... Oh, that did line up on my computer, obviously not on here. So how can this look if we think about a model of care for prisoners who self-harm, and we consider this with information sharing. And so for this, I've given you an imagined model today. So to look at these stages, if you can read them very well, and I suppose it's important to think that we have to fit these stages within the institutional response that we already have. So how can we build on what is already there? So if we thought about caring about, this could also include the reduction of any punitive institutional perceptions, which is obviously harder to do than if not they would already not be there. And that self-harm requires care and understanding this, and that this needs to be reflected within good policies. So taking care of, what could this mean? Well, that there could be training for a care role, and that this could include what is information sharing and how do you share information. And there has to be responsibility for this information sharing, which is something that was a problem within some of the larger reports, and that this responsibility needs to be directed by policy. So how could caregiving look? Well, better MDT working and information sharing. This would really help with caregiving and the communicating of the needs of the prisoner and responding to these needs. Care receiving, so this could be the communication and the information sharing with prisoners. And understanding that prisoners, and they need to understand this as well as the system, that they're worthy of care. And this should be a policy enforced ideology. So within all of this, it's important that we continue to think about staff perspectives and their capabilities and what they're able to do within their environment. And obviously this changes all the time. We think about staff cuts and where money is put within the prisons. This is important to continually consider, as well as what actually is accurate information sharing. We need to constantly reassess that. But finally, and probably most importantly, the prisoners' perspectives and what they see as their needs and what they see as caring. So that's my proposed model. So I suppose just to leave finally on, so it makes more sense within my journey, is just to look at what my next steps are. And that's just at the moment I'm putting in for my ethical application to do my research for my PhD. And as you can see, I've got an array of different methods that I hope to use. And in general, this will involve looking at what information is flows within the castle space, the understanding of information sharing that was within prison, as well as the attitudes and perceptions towards self-harm, and how the individuals within prison understand the prison service response towards the self-harm, as well as the staff response to self-harm. So thank you very much, and welcome. Any questions?